Good morning, everybody. And we are on conversation three of this Ancient Wisdom Timeless Relevance series. And today it is my absolute pleasure to bring to you, have a conversation with my dearest friend, my constant inspiration, Samantha Dugal. Welcome, Samantha. I've already warned Samantha, this is going to be a very emotional introduction for me. I met Samantha in 2003 when I just arrived from America on the back end of a divorce. My body reflected the anguish and the pain, and I had the good fortune to have Samantha as my teacher in a dance class. And I'm not really sure what she said, what she did. I remember a few things, but we've been in a continuous friendship since then. And I can tell you this, she has never stopped inspiring me because everything she teaches is real. You never see Samantha show up with anything but her whole heart, whole being, however that might be, right? She's funny, she's grumpy, she is sarcastic, she is a yogi, she is bloody enlightened, and all of that in one incredible body. If you haven't already got it, I love her. I look up to her. She has been my yoga teacher. And today we are going to talk about Vedic chanting. Thank you so much, my lovely Samantha Dugal, for joining me today.
Yeah, sure. Thanks so much for an amazing introduction. I'm so touched. I don't know how I will continue the rest of this. But yes, you continue.
So I'm going to get right to it, Samantha. We've had one conversation on Ayurveda, then on yoga. And we already saw that the two were tied, right? Both the experts on those topics talked about the same things. That this is an ancient wisdom. So it requires discipline, dedication, devotion. That it is really more about the ongoing practice and focusing on the outcome. We do talk about benefits and outcomes because it seems like that's how we process the world now. These disciplines, however, were designed to just be an ongoing practice. It came out of a reality where every person chose one practice and then that was just part of their life, like eating and going to work, and right, and so somebody chose dance and somebody chose yoga and somebody chose Vedic chanting, and it wasn't done big, and you that was your value set, that you just chose one and you stuck with it for your whole life. And the byproduct, today we start with the byproduct, the outcome. What will I get out of this? What will I benefit out of this? And so we want to do just the bare minimum to get the maximum output. And it's really actually the perspective of an ancient wisdom is the exact opposite, isn't it? So let me segue over to you. Tell us about how you arrived at Vedic chanting. You know, I know your journey started from dance to yoga. Then where did Vedic chanting show up? Why did it pull you, fascinate you so much? And you know, I also want to talk about how you learned Vedic chant, because it's one of the most arduous process that a human being can go through, right? Where you learned it, how you learned it. So tell us.
Well, actually, Cash, as you know, it's been like an over 20-year journey as far as body mind is concerned. And I'm always a seeker and I'm searching for new things to do. So my journey with yoga started in 2003 with Shivananda Yoga. And then I followed it up with Thai body work. Then I was looking for other therapeutic modems to work with, to combine with my existing practice of yoga. I've always been very intrigued by sound, by mantra, by repetition. And I was always intrigued that the sound actually sits like a groove in my brain. So if I'm actually listening to a song, even if it's a pop song, it'll be regurgitating somewhere in my subconscious mind. So for me, like, mantra and sound has always been, oh wow, fascination for me. Amazing. Well, I will come to the benefits later. Then I discovered, I Googled, like, where can I, you know, study about mantras and stuff, like, in more detail. And I came across this this chanting course. It was a 2-week Vedic chanting intensive, which was being held in Chennai at the Krishnamacharya Yoga Mandiram, very famous institute, Desika Charles, Krishnamacharya, the father of modern yoga as we know it, his son's institute. So I said, chalo, we'll go, we'll, you know, learn something new and immerse yourself for 2 weeks. Oh my God. First and foremost, Cash, I was the only Indian with those 20 people in that intensive. Shocking. And I was surprised that some of them were already extremely intensively into it. And the first mantra that we started learning was Sahana Bhavatu, which is a basic Shanti mantra, Asatoma. And the teacher made us chant each line individually just to see where we were at, you know. I just couldn't do it. Knowing the script, because Sanskrit and Hindi are the same scripts, I could not chant and intonate according to those three tones and differentiate between them. So I sounded like a donkey. And it really vastly upset me because there were these people from Slovakia, Slovenia, Japan. There were 5 Japanese on that course and they were chanting beautifully. And I said, what is this? Why is it like this? Like, and we've forgotten this whole art. It's not practiced today. And I said, man, I have to come back. I got through those 2 weeks, I have to say, with great difficulty. I put in a lot of effort, okay, because I was like in shock. I was like in despair. And I came and I discovered that there was going to be a Vedic chanting teacher training starting the next year. I signed up for that. It was a 2-year intensive back and forth to Chennai. And yeah, that's how my journey began.
So I just want to add a side story just because I know it. And so all of these trainings are in the summer in Chennai, where in the shade, the temperature in the night is 35 degrees plus. Okay, so you don't even want to talk about how it is in the middle of the day. And there you are. And how many hours a day are you chanting?
So we have at least 4 hours in the morning and we had at least 2 hours in the afternoon. That means 6 hours of chanting. And all the chants are regurgitating in your brain in the night. Like you wake up with it, you go to sleep with it. It's with you at meal times. It's insane. Yeah.
And you know, Samantha, let's talk a little bit, right? In the context of the other modalities that come out of India, right? Where does Vedic chanting sit? So is it, you know, like the big question always is it part of a theology? Is this a religious thing? Are we, you know, like I am Christian. So does Vedic chanting somehow, you know, become in conflict with my theology? Or I am not a Hindu. I'm not a, you know, I'm not a practicing anything actually. And, you know, I don't want to get into all this religious stuff. Right? This is what you know a lot. So can you put it in context? Where is this in terms of theology and where does it fall in terms of, you know, the modalities that come out of India?
So as we understand it, Vedic chanting does not fall into any theology, any religion, any bracket. It's part of what is called Sanatan Dharma, which is the natural order of life. Yeah, and it's all about invoking those elements of nature which have taken on, yes, those Hindu deities which are kind of related to that. The Hindu deities are not actual gods, Saraswati, Lakshmi and all. And they are all energies which are being invoked in a certain manner to gain something from that particular chant. So unfortunately, it has taken on, there are rituals, but it has taken on a religious connotation, but it has absolutely nothing to do with that. Just as your yoga practice has nothing to do with religion as well. It's about balancing out the energies of the mind and the body. And that's exactly, so Vedic chanting, I have to add this, that Desika Char was one of the students of Krishnamacharya who could not relate to the very strict, arduous, you know, yoga asana practice, which was taught to Patabi Joyce and you know, VKS Iyengar, he taught differently to all, everybody. So Desika Char made Vedic chanting his sadhana. Asana practice followed after the chanting. right? So it's basically, it has absolutely nothing to do with Hinduism or any kind of, anybody can do it, any part of geography can do it, anyone can do it.
And so yeah. This is really important to understand that because it all happened in India, Hinduism, of course, took and appropriated some of those powerful tools and made it part of that theology. But these modalities, whether it's yoga or Vedic chanting, in that sense, Samantha, existed before and around, you know, and are not actually, they are utilized in the Hindu theology, but they are not of Hindu theology and not limited to that. So this is something that I think that can put a lot of people to rest, isn't it? I mean, let's talk about the basic chant that maybe is the most universally known, not even a chant, the sound of Om.
Om.
So I want you to talk to Om, right? I mean, there are so many teachers in the West that are still reluctant to start and end a class, bookend it with the sound of Om, right?
What happens when you chant an Om, like Om, what happens? It's basically a sound energy. All they're doing is putting two sound energies, two aksharas, we call it in Sanskrit, together. So when you do ma, bhu, what happens? There's something moving inside the body. So there's a vibration which is happening. O, a, u, ma make up a certain sound which has a certain effect in the body which makes you more centered and collected. That's just it. So it has nothing to do with any kind of Hindu tradition. I know lots of people, they don't want to chant Om, but this is the understanding behind it.
Yes.
Shanti. What is Shanti? Like, why do we finish with Shanti? What does Shanti do for you? Shanti closes the practice. Peace, peace, peace. Peace on all levels. Inside, outside, and for the whole sansar. So that's all there is to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So Sam, let's take it a little bit forward, right? When you practice, and now we get into the piece that I think most people need to start their investigation with, what is the benefit, right? What happens when you have an ongoing, first of all, let's actually back up. How does a Vedic chanting practice look? I think the world understands what a yoga asana practice looks like and what a yoga pranayam practice looks like, right? Using regulating your breath. I think this is more popular in the world. Tell me first about how does a Vedic chanting practice look? I want to, you know, begin. Like, what am I doing? I can't go on YouTube or Google,
right?
Find some. What am I doing? Right? What do you recommend?
Let me first tell you what the difference between a Vedic chant is and between another chant.
Yes.
The way that the Vedas were passed down and transmitted was orally. These chants were heard in deep meditation by sages, and they were passed down orally to their disciples so that, number one, you establish a lineage. Lineage is very important. The teacher or the guru is linked to the student. There is a transmission, so there's no YouTube learning in this. Sorry, guys. And then, of course, once the linkage is done, there is the process of listening and then repeating exactly, precisely, so that the meaning of the chant doesn't change. For example, if you're chanting Indro or you chant Indro, changed the swara, and or if you change the pronunciation of it and you say Indro instead of Indro, different. Pal instead of Phal, strength. Changes. So that is why oral, and there's always repetition. So your teacher will repeat 100 times till you actually repeat it exactly and precisely as it is. That is the beauty of the Vedic chant. It's called Shruti, and it really develops your listening skills. From there, I'll follow up with the benefits, because this was very important to understand that you're not just reading from the Bhagavad Gita, which was Smaranam. It was written by amazing learned sages and scholars, right? So this is precise because it has come from above, from the divine, right? It was heard as sound waves, as sound energy, as sound vibrations. So which is why it cannot be studied from a book. You can't do that. You should not do it from YouTube, because you have to honor that it's coming from someone who has learned and is transmitting to you live.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then tell us, how does, like, I am now completely fascinated, because straight away I can see that when my listening improves, then immediately the quality of my relating, the quality of my work, the quality, I mean, 90% of, I think, all the misery that I at least attract in my life is because of improper listening or blah, 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 and not listening enough. So if I can shift into active and powerful listening, I can already see it. Samantha, there is like, this doesn't require more. So how does one go about? And I mean, you know, like, is there just like one place you can go and you have to wait for that? What is the process?
No, so there are several teachers around India and also around the world who actually teach this. People take, I guess, you see, I always go to my particular teacher because I relate to her vibration. She understands my weaknesses. She has listened to me chant. So I think you establish that connection, which is amazing, because there are certain sounds, and I'll tell you this, which everybody doesn't get. So there'll always be a weakness. So your teacher will recognize that. They will teach according to that. Of course, you can learn in a group. Yes, you can learn in institutes. There are several institutes, even in Bangalore, I think Sri Sri Yoga also does Vedic chanting. The North also does Vedic. There'll be small minor differences. So here you can access, but identify your teacher, the person you relate to, catch them and make them teach you, because really there's value in that, real value in that.
Sam, I want to stay with something you quickly said. Every person finds it challenging to express certain sounds.
Yes.
You said, right? Why is that? I mean, isn't that interesting? That you are here, you're practicing, but there are certain words that are challenging for you. Is that a physiological obstacle? Is there something energetic in that? So do you then practice on those words that you're challenged with? What is the, you know, you pointed towards something, so tell us more.
It's, you know what? It can be physiological. You've never used those sounds before. It can be cultural. For example, the Spanish don't have jaw in their vocabularies. They always say yo. They have great difficulty with that. You can get stuck with one or two sounds. Some like there are three different nasal sounds. No, you've never used them before. You've never learned to use your tongue in that manner. So that training is physiological. Some of it is cultural. Some of it is conditioning. Right? Like ba and wa. There is no wa in Sanskrit. It's ba. So you see, there's it's like that. It's all three. For sure.
So Samantha, when you are now accessing new ways of pronouncing words, is there not an impact on your brain?
Definitely, because linguistically, your left side of the brain is completely turned on. The precision, the conciseness. So I'm coming to the benefits now. Should I enlist the benefits?
Yes.
On a physical level, okay? A chant, very basic physiological level, a chant always works on the exhalation. So you are exhaling when you're chanting. You improve the quality of your breath. And plus your digestive fire, because na, the sound, na is always coming from your stomach, from your belly. So you have to chant from your belly. Improves on the breath, improves your digestive fire, immune system as well. Hormonal changes, has all these effects on a very physiological level. Mental level, as we were talking about the brain just now. Your brain has to first on a physiological level, you listen. Then you absorb. Then you retain, and this is for any learning process. Then you reflect on that. Then you practice it. Then you experience it. Then you teach it. This is the process. So how much focus do you need? This is a practice of dharana. It's one of the eight limbs of yoga. You have to concentrate to really absorb, learn very precisely, and then reproduce the sound. So on a mental level, works on memory, sequence, concentration. On a bhakti level, or the emotional, every chant has a certain vibration. The Gayatri Mantra has a certain vibration. If you relate to the deity of Lakshmi, she has a certain vibration. Ganesh has a certain vibration.
So I'm interrupting you. Lakshmi represents prosperity. Ganesh, I think, is universally loved, but is the harbinger of new beginnings. And
new beginnings.
Right? So go on. Sorry.
Remover of obstacles. And Shiva has a very heart-cutting energy. And it's all about, you know, being the ascetic, being the meditator. So every deity has a different energy. So you're invoking those energies. What are you relating to now? So on the bhakti level, you are offering this to them. Right? It's an invocation. You're invoking. You're saying, yeah. Ganapati, come sit with me. And, you know, remove the obstacles. Begin anew afresh for me. So that on a bhakti level. On a spiritual level, eventually you have to go past the mantra and there's only silence. Right? So the mantra is just the tool. It has the power to liberate you, to expand you and liberate you. So these are the benefits. So that we just make that extremely clear for everyone who's listening. Yeah.
So, you know, I just want to say this. This is like this week has just, I mean, it's reached like crescendo points now. Sam, the idea is that we are really using maybe a minuscule portion of the wisdom that is available from what we call the geography of India, right? The ancient wisdom is so relevant, so can transform our modern reality. And forget about the rest of the world, we in India also are not accessing almost any of it, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
What you have just said, I mean, you know, as you well know, I continuously talk about living your best life, experiencing measure of success, experiencing significance. And this is so, so powerful, because right here, somebody is handing you the manual. You know, you just have to follow it step by step and there it is. Sam, what is the reason that people still shy away from, I mean, why wasn't that group all of with Indian people? Why is it that you will still go to that intensive and you are the one person there, and maybe there is a, you know, more people actually from other countries with curiosity? What is the obstacle for people to be attracted and wanting to, supercharge their lives?
I think number one, a lot of our culture and our knowledge and everything that's been handed down to us has been taken for granted. And a lot of it is forgotten. Yes, there are just hand-me-downs. And, you know, even yoga went to the West. It became popular there, then came back. Because you had so many of these amazing now yoga teachers who kept coming back to learn from here, right? And so a lot of it was taken for granted. Plus, secondly, there is always the principle of effort. You have all these things, if you want to learn from scratch, this requires discipline. Every day, you started your conversation with this, every day practice, spiritual practice, sadhana, same time, same place. Do it. No matter what, you're feeling under the weather, your mood is this way, is that way. Look at your yoga mat, sit down there. Look at your place of your sthan of prayer or worship or whatever it is. Sit down there, do it. No matter how tired you are, whatever else is happening in your life, because your sadhana cushions you, right? I think these are the two major factors of, these are the two major obstacles, yeah. If you have anything to add.
So Sam, I'm going to invite you to do a little demonstration. But before I do that, I have two or three questions. One is, what is the one, like, what are you saying to the listeners? Where can they immediately, one tip that they can immediately start with? What can they do? They're listening to you. What can they do right now? Right? Like, they want to get started. They want to fall into action. Kya kare?
Chant Om. Chant Om 11 times. Close your eyes and see how you feel after that.
Yeah. What is, Sam, the... is there a protocol? Is there a right way of saying it, wrong way of saying it? Is there a way you can harm yourself? Like, is there Like if I say to myself, you know, and there will be some listeners here who've never, they don't live in India. They've never chanted Om. So when you do the demonstration, if you would also do Om, that would be fantastic. But when you're ready then to take it up to the next level, Sam, the next question is, how can people reach out to you? Like, how do you share? Like, how do you interact with a student for Vedic chanting specifically? How do you want to be approached? How does it work? Is it like a group class? What is it? I want to learn Vedic chanting. Samantha, I like what you're saying. How can I find you?
So I always put up everything on Instagram, on my websites. I constantly have workshops and classes which I conduct. I'm also available for individual trainings, private trainings. Since it's so specialized, usually people like to do it in ones and twos. Also, so that the teacher gets to like really listen to you. So you could always reach out to me on, by my email. Would you like to give the details right now, Cash? Or
No, I'm going to add it in the comments. But your preferred method is surely Instagram, isn't it?
It's Instagram or it's email or it's WhatsApp. I'm always available on that. So all my details as Cash.
And sharing, would all your details be on your website?
Yes, they would be on my website.
So really, even if those are not and just watching this video, on Instagram and on her website, she's Samantha Duggal.
Right? Yeah, without the H. So it's Samantha, yeah. SAMANTA DUGGAL. Yeah.
And that's also an interesting thing. It's not a coincidence, you know, because when we started our Samantha, you said this, and I didn't talk about this. Samantha first started as a dancer, and she is an outstanding dancer. And somewhere on my Facebook feed, you will see one of the videos she's recently done. It's a joy to watch Samantha dance. And it's really interesting that there's always been this almost attraction or immersion with this rhythm and the power of the sound, isn't it? Samantha also does sound bowl healing. So it really, there is a pattern here. And for those who do yoga practice with Samantha or pranayam practice, and as I have in the past, you will notice that all her classes also have a rhythm that is uniquely, it's almost like a choreography. And so it flows. And so for those of you who are interested, of course, I'll put in the comments, but you know now to find her, right?
Thanks, Cash.
And before you do the demonstration, I also want to say to you, is Vedic chanting, because Vedic chanting is less known than yoga or Ayurveda for sure, is Vedic chanting a standalone? Or would you recommend that a practitioner it needs a complementary discipline like yoga or whatever. So do you Vedic chant and then do asana practice or breath work, you know, or is it just the sadhana just with the chanting is complete?
So it can be purely only that sadhana that you're doing. But I have to say that having a straight spine, which is what all yoga asana, enables you to have, is an amazing complementary practice to have. Pranayama as well, the breath, the length of your breath helps in mantra chanting as well. Having a balanced diet, so Ayurveda also ties in with that, to have a good fire, digestive fire, to have your pitta in balance. So you see, everything connects with everything. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And so to that extent, Sam, is it possible to say that wherever you start, the thread connects? So like, choose one thing, make that, and you use the word sadhana. Sadhana is equivalent yet not equal to the word discipline. It's like a combination of devotion and discipline. So there is a level of staying with something when you're in sadhana, even when the commitment wavers, it is that devotion or almost liking, right? It's just like the analogy I use is that, you know, when you become a mom, you never forget to cook food for your child, even though because there is that discipline, there's also that unconditional love or devotion for the child, you're not going to feed Maggie to your child while you might have eaten years of Maggie for yourself. So it's that relationship of, you know, of commitment and devotion that Samantha has been speaking about. Is that, would you say that that's accurate, Sam?
That's absolutely accurate, because discipline has a very kind of a school kind of implication, and sadhana, as you said, has that element of love in it. Your day is like, it's like, you know, you can't do without it. It's your thing. It's like how you brush your teeth. It's second nature to you. So that's, yeah, you put it absolutely
right,
perfectly.
And it's a in that sense, even a feminine quality, isn't it? There is, and not to say that you are in male body or female body, but it's a feminine quality. It's a softness and surrender.
There's a certain softness to it, yes.
Right. And then that when you include that or infuse your life with that, it feeds into all areas of your life. I mean, can you not say, so what Samantha is suggesting is that choose some sadhana. It could be that you're rolling your mat out and doing the asana practice. This is what Ranu spoke about yesterday. Or today, you know, what Samantha is saying is that, you know, maybe for you, it would be chanting 11 ohms every day, same place, same time. That's simple. That would be essentially 5 or 6 minutes, you know, end to end, however slow you might be with those 11 ohms, right? And then it slowly builds, and the thread will bring you, your body and mind and everybody, it will be ready for the next step, isn't it?
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, all the junctions will come together. Like whether you're doing a karma, or whether you're chanting a mantra, or whether you're doing your asana, or just sitting, meditating, or reflecting, the goal is the same.
And this really also sets up the conversation for meditation. I'm not going to let you go, my lovely Samantha Dugal, without a demonstration. So if you would please, and for those who are listening, this is a moment to put all your other distractions away, really have your attention here, and listen in.
Okay, Cash, I'm just going to chant a very short Shiva Panchakshari mantra. It's to Lord Shiva, and I guess everybody knows Om Namah Shivaya. So I will chant, and I will chant in three different ways. Okay, whenever you're chanting, and if you're practicing your ohms, always sit straight and do it from your belly. Yeah, so Namah Shivaya cha. Om Namah Shivaya. Shivaya cha. Om Namah Shivaya. Shivaya namo Namah Shivaya. Shivaya cha cha. Shivaya. Shivaya cha. Om Namah Shivaya. Shivaya namo Namah Shivaya cha cha. Shivaya namo Namah Shivaya cha. Shivaya cha cha. Shivaya. Shivaya cha. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi.
I could really stay here forever, but my dearest friend has to be traveling soon. So we are going to have to let Samantha go. Before I do that though, Sam, seriously, I really was going to say, will you chant a Shiva chant? And then I forgot it, and there you are. And you know, I've been saying this the whole week. This is it. This is when there is alignment. This is when there is connection, and true connection, feels like this, isn't it? It is, and it is, it's almost palpable.
Thank you, Cash, so much for having me. I have to add that when you chant, or when you listen to someone chanting, automatically there was 3-4 seconds of silence which automatically happened. That is the silence you want that's why you do this. That's all.
Fantastic. And I'm going to, like I said, this whole week, it's my job to unpack it for all of you. All three of our guests have been speaking about the same thing, that the destination and the journey are the same, whether we are talking about Ayurveda or yoga or now Vedic chanting. You are, whether you call it union, whether you call it balance, whether you talk about silence, which is that experience of being part of the whole, of not anymore feeling that separation. We are all talking about that one. And I think Ranu said it beautiful. In the end, what are we looking for? We are looking for happiness. Mm-hmm. And what we are unable maybe to express, that happiness in its ultimate form looks like this. It looks like bliss. It looks like that connection, that complete connection, isn't it?
And you're going to bring that to us, right?
Yeah.
At the culmination of...
Absolutely. There you go. I'm going to bring it. And tomorrow, we are going to carry this conversation forward with meditation. But for now, thank you so much. Thank you for being in my life. You always light it up. I always say the world's a better place with Samantha in it. I love you.
Love you.
Take care.
Thank you, everybody, for listening in. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.